All right, we are back with episode 10 of Bulldog Banter. We're back from our off-season hiatus. I am joined by my co-host Omar, and you know it's been a while since we've potted, and there's a lot to talk about. And so we figured we might as well hop on the sticks and talk about what's going on. I think obviously since we last spoke to you, we now have Big East title. There's a lot of recruiting news to talk about. There's a lot of program news to talk about. But we want to get started today with the big news, which is Christian Watson, the local wing from St. John's College High School, and what his decision to go to Miami means, both for Georgetown, both for this year and more in the long term too. So it's good to be back with you all. And Omar, it's good to be back with you. What's up? How you been?
I've been good. I've been good. Georgetown's been good. We didn't even get to touch on the Denver Anglin commitment when it happened, so lots to discuss today. So with Christian Watson, obviously, I don't know. What were your thoughts? I'm obviously disappointed. I wanted to get, you know.
Yeah, let's start with the happy news first. So we have our first 2022 commitment. We have Denver Anglin. Combo/point guard plays for New York Renaissance, probably a top five shooter in the class of 2022.
If not better, yeah.
If not better. I think it's a great commitment. I'm very excited about it. I think the interesting thing will be if he can make that jump to being a point guard, because I think right now, the recruiting analysts out there view him as more of a combo or shooting guard. He has been very vocal about wanting to be a point guard. So I think it'll be interesting to see how he fits in with Georgetown long-term. But I'm thrilled about the commitment. I think that it's a great way to start off the class. What are your thoughts on him?
I think part of the reason why people pin him as a shooting guard is because a lot of people only really saw him play at Peach. And, you know, the Rens are probably the best team up until their star got injured. So he wasn't like some like super ball dominant player, and I don't think he really got to show a lot of what he can do from the point guard position, because he was basically just, you know, catch and shoot guy, and he made plays and all that, but he wasn't like, that wasn't his role, that wasn't his task. I think his high school tape shows a lot more of that, both in terms of his like vision, you know, his passing, his ball handling. It's obviously not, I wouldn't say it's, you know, Big East caliber at this point, but it can be. Like, I don't think that's like a thing that, you know, any other, like with any high school point guard, right? Like they'll have to work on it to get to this level. But I think he can be a legitimate point guard. Like, if, like, even the term point guard today is very difficult to use in any single sentence. Like, Steph Curry's a point guard, right? But he's not a point guard. Like, he doesn't play like Chris Paul. He's fundamentally different. So you don't need him to be a guy to succeed at this level. That's like, you know, like super elite vision or super elite ball handling. He just needs to be able to score and needs to be able to find open shooters if he's moving. But I'm very excited about it. I think he honestly has a very high chance of being probably one of the best shooters in Georgetown history, if not the best, just because that's not necessarily been our, like, you know, forte. And it, obviously, you know, it depends how long he sticks and everything. And hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, we get a 4-year player that's appears to be very, very, you know, high character, extremely intelligent, high ball IQ, etc. So, yeah, I think he could be a very important part of this team for several years. And yeah, Patrick Ewing's got a good one.
So what I heard from that was Steph Curry and Denver Anglin are one and the same.
That's basically what I was trying to say. And thank you for filtering that for me. Yeah,
and I'm here to agree with that. I mean, his shot is like, I mean, it's one of the more pure shots you'll see out there. So I think that's exciting. I think the ball handling, like you said, I mean, there's some improvement that can be had there. But he plays for Gil St. Bernard in high school, and he's their point guard. So he has experience as being the primary ball handler for his team. Obviously, playing for Rens, he wasn't needed to be that main guy for the whole time. But he has experience playing point guard for them too. So I think it's a great start to the class. I think you're going to have, hopefully, Dante Harris coming back for his junior year, and then you have Denver coming off the bench playing more an off-ball role, and then hopefully, you know, if Dante comes back as a senior, you have a two-headed monster at the point guard combo guard position with Denver and Dante. But if Dante continues, if he heads in the direction that a lot of Georgetown fans thinks he can head in, he leaves after his junior season, then you're well protected with Denver to be your next starting point guard. Now, I think the interesting thing that you and I have talked about offline is the debate between Denver Anglin and Rowan Brumbaugh. Rowan is a player who started off of a lot of people's radars, plays at a small school in Western Massachusetts, Northfield Mount Hermon, but he's from the D.C. area, actually lives right by Saxby's, as many Georgetown alums will recognize that name. But I think that you and I were kind of torn on deciding if we prefer Denver or Rowan. Rowan is 6'4", has incredible handles, a great passer, great vision, but he's a good shooter, but not the same as Denver. Whereas Denver is an elite shooter and has good handles, but isn't necessarily in the same caliber as Rowan. And I think that's going to be it's going to be interesting to see how those two players go forth in their college careers. Rowan just committed to Northwestern, and obviously we have Denver now. What are your thoughts on the debate between those two guys? They're different players, but both talented in their own unique ways.
I think they're both very good players. And if we were to land either of them, you know, it was like, it's a win-win. Like, there's no losing if we get either. I think we got one of them, so I'm not like sitting here sweating the debate. But I don't know. To be honest, like, I know he was obviously high on us. That's just, you know, that's what we both heard, that, you know, the Hoyas had a good chance for a while. But I never saw it happening for lots of reasons. But number one being, like, I don't know, like, who really wants to go to school? Literally, you can't even say it's down the street. Like, he literally lives on the campus. Like, there are many, many Georgetown seniors live further away from Georgetown the undergrad campus than he does. And, like, I don't know, maybe he liked that. Like, maybe that was his thing. But I find it very hard to believe anyone would want to spend 4 years, like, literally, basically in your parents' house. So I don't know. I didn't see it happening from that angle. But also besides that, I do like the fact that, like, we're not, you know, Rowan's a very, very good player. And he has really good size. Like, he does a lot of things very well. But I do like the fact that we are making three-point shooting a priority. That's sort of a signal of the type of style of basketball that we want to play. It's going to be hopefully, I mean, like, Rowan's obviously, you know, he can play well in this era, but that's not what I'm saying. But I think Denver being an elite three-point shooter is just something we have not had in a while. I don't even know who, like, was the last truly quote-unquote elite three-point shooter we've had. Maybe like Jonathan Wallace. I don't know. We've brought on guys that we thought would be elite three-point shooters, you know, like Reggie Cameron and some others, and they were good, but they weren't necessarily like in that caliber. So it's, I like the add. I like what it brings to the team for the next, especially for the next couple of years, while we still have, you know, Dante taking over the reins, however long he's here for. So I'm very happy with Denver. I'm not, like, I wouldn't say that Rowan would be bad for the team or anything like that. Like, he's a very good player, but I think that Denver is a good fit for us moving forward. I think we made the right call there.
Yeah, and I think Denver, like, I feel like his floor is a Javon Blair type role, and that's a pretty high floor. I think he can come in immediately. Javon didn't start off with any handles, really. But by his junior and senior year, I mean, he was bringing the ball up the floor on some possessions, and obviously he had the 3-point shooting. I think you can have something very similar with Denver as well. I expect Denver to be better than that. And I think Denver's ceiling is almost being a Steph Curry type guard, not saying the same production, but someone who can stretch the floor, someone who has great handles and can also, you know, make plays happen for his teammates as well. The interesting thing for me with Rowan is, knowing Rowan like I do, that if Georgetown wanted Rowan, then he would have gone there. And so that's what makes me think it's just going to be, it kind of seems like a Rowan versus Denver. And so it'll be interesting. I think they're very well off with Denver. And I think it was probably the right choice. I think you need 3-point shooting, but it will be kind of interesting to watch Rowan's career unfold the same time as Denver's. Moving on to the rest of the 2022 class, obviously a great start with Denver Anglin. So now we're left thinking, what's next? So there's really not that much room on the 2022-23 team in terms of open scholarship spots. Right now you have one spot left officially. You can probably assume there's going to be at least one more spot in addition to that. So you probably have two more spots to work with in terms of scholarships, just with the way that players transfer out these days. So let's just say, for the sake of argument, we have two spots to work with. So a lot of us were thinking, hey, Christian Watson, local guy, plays at a position of need for Georgetown in the class of 2022. Has been someone who Georgetown's been involved with for a while and has really cranked things up over the last, you know, 2 months, I would say. And things look good. I mean, I think we had both heard from several people that it was as close to a done deal as it gets. The coaching staff was feeling good about him. It just seemed like from several corners, from the recruiting world, the coaching world, that people thought Christian Watson at Georgetown was a done deal. And then Christian Watson goes on an official visit to Miami, good old Miami. They are, obviously there's the UNCs and the Michigans who just kind of seem to poach these guys from the DMV right under our nose. But Miami is kind of one of those people too. I mean, they got Ja'Kai Robinson and from last year's class, who we were also going after hard. And now they get Christian Watson, who just committed to Miami today. And so that it hurts. It's another local wing that Georgetown is not going to pull in. And, you know, you can argue that, you know, local recruiting doesn't matter, that, you know, maybe Georgetown feels good about Chris Livingston. But this is a player that I know that Jordan, and you know too, that Georgetown's been going after hard. Ewing has been pursuing him personally, recruiting him personally, and it didn't work out. And so it's disappointing. I think they can rebound from this, but Watson was a good player. He has a high ceiling. He's more of a late bloomer type, but I think he really would have gone a long way, just like a Terrence Williams would have, towards rebuilding those local roots. What are your thoughts on Watson committing to Miami, and just what are your overall thoughts on the local recruiting efforts by Georgetown recently?
It's fine. Like, you know, I think that's sort of like, it's fine, right? Like it is what it is. I don't think he's like a program changing recruit per se. I think he'll be a contributor for sure at Miami, and he's a good player, but I don't think he's not in the same caliber of like the kind of player that, you know, Livingston or what have you will be or ever will be. Just from what I've seen, hopefully he proves
definitely. Wrong,
but
yeah.
Yeah. I don't see like, you know, I don't see this as being like the thing that, you know, is the nail in the coffin for our local recruiting, et cetera. I would say that it's bad that we were very, very close and we lost. Like, I don't think there's a strong argument that like we weren't interested in him. Like, we were very, very clearly very interested in him. Like, Coach Ewing went to his games. We spent a lot of the summer showing up, and, you know, we were very clearly right there at the finish line. We just got beat, and that's not something you want to see. I don't know what went into that thought process. I could, because Miami it's obviously, you know, it's a very fun school. It's a great city, and et cetera. Like, it's kind of difficult to speculate onto what was his thought process. But I don't think Coach L has it really anymore. Like, I don't think that team's going to be particularly good, however long Watson's there for. And I like pretty consistently the DMV guys that end up there end up regretting it and end up transferring. Whether that was Chris Likes, Earl Timberlake, I don't know. Hopefully, like, I would not be surprised if one of Ja'Kai or Watson are in the or whenever he gets there are in the transfer portal pretty soon. It's just not like a lot of people that end up there playing for him don't like him. I don't know why, but it is what it is. So I think it's an interesting decision. It sounds like part of the biggest reasons for him was he wanted playing time as a freshman. And that makes sense. Like, it's an ACC school. He definitely will get playing time there. They don't have like a crazy amount of talent there by the time he 22 comes around. And we didn't really have a ton of playing time for him as a freshman, assuming Jordan Riley sticks, assuming Aminu sticks for a second year, which is obviously up in there. But if those guys are there, then really, like, would he just be basically coming on in a backup role? Because he's a 2-3, and those two spots are pretty solidly nailed down, I'd say, for at least that year if they're there. So he definitely had the upside there in terms of minutes. Miami's a fun city, and, you know, everyone wants to leave for college. Like, I would never want to have stayed where I grew up. So I don't know why he would too. Like, it's a difficult thing to ask for a kid. So I'm not sweating it. I don't like the fact that we're losing, and B, I feel like we're even as a fan base now. This is just kind of like a defining moment in terms of like whether we really care about DMV recruits. Like we've struck out completely in the 22 class on all of the DMV recruits we've been in on. That's, you know, Tyrell Ward. That's Cam Whitmore. That's Rowan. Like basically the full laundry list of top DMV recruits this year. Judah. That we were all in on, and like, it's not like we weren't recruiting them. We whiffed on all of them, like every single one, and we were recruiting them pretty hard. Like none of these guys are just guys we were like casually. It's like we were actually into it, and we really wanted to get. Seems like we really wanted to get one of these guys, and we just completely wiped. So that it is what it is, right? I feel like for as a fan base, it's kind of like a well, either A, they're not prioritizing DMV recruits enough, or they're not doing it correctly. And like maybe it's time for us to kind of like move on from that being like a sticking point for how we evaluate the staff, so long as the recruits are that are coming in are still good. But what do you think about that? I feel like we've kind of like hit that point now. We're just kind of like it's just not going to get fixed. Whatever, as long as Zering is here.
I know it's like yeah. It's you mentioned like the nail in the coffin, and I don't really think there's necessarily at any point where there's an official nail in the coffin. It's just like it's just one after another. All these recruits that we make an effort for. I mean, you can say like in 2022, we made several hard pursuits after several local guys. I mean, if you want to say that we didn't try in 2021 or 2020, and so be it, but like it is well documented that Patrick Ewing pursued Cam Whitmore, Tyrell Ward, at least before the summer hard, he pursued, he recruited personally Rodney Rice, but seemed to dip out in him too. Who else for the local wings?
Too many to count.
Yeah, I mean, there's too many to count. And, I mean, obviously Christian Watson now, and it just seems like and there's also Justin Fernandez, who they tried to go in on late, and they were kind of rebuffed there. It just seems like it feels like they care about local recruiting. I mean, they're still going after these guys and attempting to build relationships with them, and it seems like they're able to build these relationships, but they're not able to seal the deal. And so I think that, and this was kind of the crux of the issue yesterday with those that were arguing about this, was that does local recruiting matter? Like, do we need local recruits? And coming off of a 2021 recruiting class that is top 15 in the nation, that has Aminu Muhammad, who started out his high school career in Washington, D.C., but I wouldn't necessarily count him as a DMV guy. So let's just say for the sake of argument, the 2021 class didn't have any local guys, and it's top 15. So you can say, okay, doesn't matter where they come from as long as you're getting talent. But for me, it's like saying, it's like you're in the boxing ring and you're going up against someone, let's say a UNC or Michigan. And let's say you win that fight, but you win that fight with your right arm tied to your chest. So you win it with one hand. And that's essentially what Georgetown seems to be doing right now. Like they're recruiting well. I mean, we know that Patrick Ewing is a good recruiter, and he's getting results. But if the ceiling is so much higher, if it could be so much better, like imagine if you were getting a top 15 class like we did in 2021, but you also include a top guy from DC as well. Then you're talking a top five, a top 10 class, and that can matter in terms of talent. Like it's all about bringing in talent. So I don't think we're saying that Georgetown is failing here. Certainly we're not saying that Patrick Ewing is doing a good job, but when your school is in the talent hotbed of high school basketball talent, you'd be silly not to invest resources into that area to make yourself be more successful. And right now Georgetown is not having success there. So it's just, it's just a matter of, you know, allocating resources and recruiting efficiently, really, because you can recruit players from California, from Texas, from the Northeast, and you can have success there. But part of recruiting is, you know, being in these kids' lives and making constant outreach. And the easiest way to like keep in touch with kids is those that are close geographically to you. So it takes less resources to keep in touch with these kids to recruit them, because they're a 15-minute drive away as opposed to a 5-hour drive or a 3-hour plane ride.
Right.
And so it just feels like it just feels like we could be so much more. And so I'm happy with the recruiting, but it's just, if we want to be DC's team, I feel like we need DC's players. And Austin Freeman chimed in on this briefly last night, in response to our good friend, GU Hoya fans tweet, like, I'm not sure how much local recruiting matters in the grand scheme of things, as long as you're getting in like good talent and you have like top 20 classes perennially. But if we ever want to beat DC's team again, like, you're going to need to get some of DC's players. And I don't know, it just bothers me.
Yeah, I would feel worse about it if Maryland was just hitting gold in DC every other year. Who was the last top local guy they landed? Like, Cullen, maybe? Like, I can't think of a single guy that they land Baltimore recruits every so often.
I mean, like, I would even take a Baltimore recruit right now. Baltimore or DC.
I would say, like, for me, that if it was just us, like, we were the only team here that was just, like, completely losing at this, at landing DMV recruits, I'd feel bad about it. But the fact that Maryland's losing too tells me that it might not necessarily be something just about us. And I think part of that might be, A, either kids just literally do not want to stay home for school, which is very practical. Like, could be a real challenge that any local team has at, you know, retaining top talent. Or B, it could just be that, like, you know, there's something in the specific AAU circles that's kind of difficult for these schools to develop relationships with that, like, we're probably not privy to. Whatever it is, it's just like, I'm with you. I think it would make it's a lot easier, I think, if you just devote, and you'd be able to be a lot more efficient if you could devote resources locally at home and landing the top guys here than elsewhere. But it's not getting fixed. Like, it's kind of like beating a dead horse at this point.
It feels like I don't see, unless there's a staff change, like, I don't see it improving. It just feels like that's the way it is.
Yeah. If the recruiting classes start to suffer because of it, I would, you know, my opinion would change, but so long as we're still, like, you know, up in the top 3-4 teams in the Big East for our recruiting classes, like, it's not something that's going to, you know, really bother me, you know. Like, I get it. I would love to get it fixed too, and I'd love to have, like, DC supporting us, etc. But I think the one thing that probably would get the city on our back more than anything is if we were good, right? Having local kids to support and root for would help. But if we were winning consistently, like, you know, last year, at the end of last year that we were doing, like, the city will come around, like, no matter what. Like, at the end of the day, Georgetown is DC's team. Like, it's just what it is. It's the historic roots are too strong. It's just they need some spark to get there. And then I think once the winning comes back, then obviously then the top DC kids will also start to get in shit again. So it's like one of those things where I'm like, I'm ready to stop making a point to, like, really, really be fighting about. But it's just, yeah, you kind of got to shrug your shoulders at some point.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like, My thing is, like, the people that say, like, oh, it just seems like DC kids don't want to go to school in DC. But that's not necessarily true. I mean, George Mason, like, they just got Devin Dinkins. We know that Rowan wanted to come to Georgetown. I can say that in conversations with people near Rodney Rice, like, the reason that he included Georgetown and Maryland in his top, I think it was 6, was because he was interested in going to both those schools because they were from the area. And so they weren't necessarily like reaching out to him the most when he made that top 6 list, but he wanted to, like, keep that option open because he wanted them to want him and neither of them did. And the DeMatha thing is a whole nother issue, like, with Hunter Dickinson. And I think Maryland hasn't gotten a DeMatha kid in, like, I don't know, 18, 17 years, I don't even know. And we haven't gotten one since, I think, Mikhail Hopkins. That's a conversation another time. But I don't really buy that DC kids don't want to go to school in DC. Like, you see kids from across the country, like, staying at close to home there. And I don't know why DC would be any different. Like, I don't buy it. Do you?
I mean, I know when I was making my decision for college, that played a role. Like, I didn't want to stay local. I wanted to get away. Mm-hmm. I don't think that you can compare my options for college to, like, that of, like, a 4-star recruit for basketball, obviously. But I don't know. I don't know enough about like the thought processes for these. I think a lot of them definitely would be interested in staying back home and playing. It's probably not like a, you know, one approach for everyone thing, but I do think that might be a factor to work against for some of these players. And like it sounded like Watson actually like was pretty set on Georgetown up until his Miami visit, right? And then he, so that means he, A, he was really interested in it, but then also like maybe that allure of getting away from home when he went on that visit really hit home for him. So like I don't know. It's yeah, I'm sure for some people they would be down to stay in DC and play, but I think that is probably, at least to some degree, it's something that you have to work against when you're recruiting. Like think about for Nova, like obviously the Philly market for players isn't the same as DC, but like have any of their top players been from Philadelphia? I would not, I can't say I know enough about like the
I know,
actual
like off the top of
players
my
have been
head, I'm
from
trying to think
DC.
of like Philly kids.
It's kind of apples and oranges at some point because, you know, the Philadelphia basketball scenes differ from here. Like DC is the best place in the
I
country
mean, you
for high school basketball
like
recruiting,
look at
but
UConn. They got Donovan Clingan from Bristol, Connecticut. So one would say like no, like Storrs, Connecticut is like barren. Like there's nothing to do in Storrs, Connecticut, and like Bristol, Connecticut is just like suburbia. It's fine, but like UConn pulled in Donovan Clingan from Bristol, Connecticut, pretty easy. Like didn't seem like he really wanted to like. And this is again, this is anecdotal. So like, this is just one player. But it's a Big East rival, and this is a place that is less nice than the DMV area, and yet UConn still managed pretty easily to get him to come there. So I just don't think that Georgetown has any added issues like getting DC kids to stay in the area where like different from any other region of the country. Like I think there's always going to be some kids who will want to go out and explore the country, and that's absolutely their right and good for them. But I don't think there's anything unique about DC kids, especially wanting to leave the area. So
Fair.
for those people that are saying like all the DC kids or most DC kids just want to get out of the area, I just don't buy it. And I think that's just kind of a crutch to lean on in addressing like the true reasons behind why this local recruiting just hasn't been up to par.
Yeah, it's definitely deeper than that. It's not just that. I would definitely recognize that there's something else at play here that we're not landing kids and why Maryland's not landing kids. I just don't know it, to be honest. And it's hard for me to speculate without that extra knowledge.
Yeah. And so with Christian Watson now off the board, we also have Cam Whitmore off the board as he now has a top three of Illinois, Villanova, and UNC. And it looks like he's going to Villanova. So that is really
Just
annoying.
gross.
Just
Just gross.
gross. I mean, they
I hate that so much,
weren't
so
even
much.
like on the radar to begin, and they just swooped out of nowhere. So that's great. Love
Yeah.
that. So the wing options for Georgetown in 2022 are starting to dwindle. And
Yep.
so this brings us to the gem of the 2022 class, Chris Livingston, top five player in the country from Akron, Ohio. He's a mentee of LeBron James, kind of supposed to be the next big thing coming out of that area. Georgetown is now in his top four. So we got Georgetown, Tennessee State, Memphis, and Kentucky. And it seems like Georgetown is all in on him, for better or for worse now. There are some other wings in the 2022 class they could potentially go after, like Ryan Dunn. Jalen Martin was a guy that really seemed to love Georgetown, I would say last year and even into the spring, but things really seem to have dropped off there.
Yeah.
It really seems like it's kind of Chris Livingston, maybe Ryan Dunn or bust.
Or Prince Aligbe too. He's,
See,
I
well,
think.
so he, yeah, I mean, it seems like he and Georgetown have been dancing around each other. Prince Oligbe is from Minnesota, former teammates with Chet Holmgren. It seems like their interest has been like coming and going. So I can't really get a good read on if they're a serious suitor for him or not. So let's just say Ryan Dunn, Prince Oligbe, and Chris Livingston. But I want to focus on Livingston right now. For obvious reasons. I mean, for the same reason that Patrick Baldwin Jr. would have been a program-changing commitment, this would be another program-changing commitment.
Right.
And we're now in the top four for him, and he's going to be announcing on his birthday on October 15th. An interview came out today with Joe Tipton from On3 Sports. Livingston's comments about Georgetown were glowing, talking about the family atmosphere, saying he loved Washington, D.C., saying that he loves Patrick Ewing and that he has an NBA background and what he can do for his game, even talking up the NIL opportunities, which is a whole nother bag of worms to talk about. But what are your thoughts on where we stand with him? Do you feel at all confident? And have you shaken the trauma of the Patrick Baldwin Jr. saga from the summer yet?
I'm going to put a crystal ball Hoyos Tsiramis prediction. I think we're getting Chris Livingston.
Oh, dude.
For no actual inside information outside of the fact that he is from Ohio and I am from Ohio.
There you go.
And he is his birthday is October 15th. My birthday is October 13th. So I kind of feel that connection with him, and I feel like he just I hope he's listening to this, so he knows that there's like another Ohio Hoya that like he can use as a resource. But in real talk, it doesn't sound like anyone likes our chances outside of our fan base. Like you saw the Andrew Slater tweets yesterday that seemed to indicate it was Kentucky or Memphis.
Yeah.
And he didn't indicate which one it was, but it didn't sound like we were fierce in play. I think someone else mentioned on Twitter, I forget who. So apologies if I'm leaving you out, but this kind of feels like the type of recruitment where Georgetown is the school that he really likes and like really feels a connection with, but like for some other reason, he just can't go there. Whether that's like NIL opportunities or something along those lines, I don't know, but that seems to be that's the vibe that they've been getting. And that kind of is what scares me, is that like he clearly loves Georgetown. Like those, the comments that he wrote were like as genuine as anyone I've seen speak about Georgetown for, especially for like our most recent recruits. And he seems to have like an affinity for Patrick Ewing, and they have like a connection already. So that's great. And like, I would say we probably have as good of a chance as any of those other schools, but like, I don't, for whatever reason, we just can't compete with those schools in NIL. And it doesn't really make sense yet, just cause like it's DC. Like why does Memphis, Tennessee have more economic opportunities for like sponsorships than Washington, D.C.? I would not have like a solid explanation for that, other than like, you know, the infrastructure that's been in place at these schools are different for helping pay these athletes. So I don't know what exactly it is, but like we should not be, in my opinion, losing out over in NIL races, especially for like the top couple recruits. Like if we were on top of our on top of it in terms of NIL, I think we should be able to compete with like a lot of very top schools when it comes to this stuff, just because it is DC and we're really the only DC school that is a factor for this stuff. But it doesn't seem like that's something that we've been able to materialize or capitalize on appropriately, at least at this stage. So I don't know. I think Livingston is I would not say that I like our chances per se outside of the fact that he's Ohioan also, but I think that we can't, like, there's no reason why a Memphis should beat us out, in my opinion. Like we will be a very good team next year, I think, if he comes into the fold. If Aminu stays, Jordan develops, Dante develops, etc. Like with him, like I think we would be, like, there's very few teams in this country that can beat us, especially in the conference. So like there's not gonna be like a strong basketball reason why we wouldn't be able to land him. It's just the question is, are we doing what we need to do and all the like other stuff that matters when it comes to recruiting that would help us land him? And at this point, we don't really have any evidence to suggest that we are.
Yeah. So I wrote an article, shameless plug. I wrote an article about this over on Hilltop Hoops, and just kind of like looking at the situation for each school in his Final Four, and just looking at comments that he's made in several recent interviews, and just kind of looking at the whole situation holistically. And it always seems to come back to NIL. Every interview he's had, he's mentioned NIL. And it, you know,
and
obviously
he's considering the G League, so like clearly that matters.
Yeah, I mean he's considering the G League, but it's I mean, he said in one interview that like the NIL is level the playing field now, so I don't get the sense that G League is like a serious option. But you know, we'll take that into consideration as well. But sure. Like with NIL, you have Kentucky, who has been on the day that NIL was announced, they announced their own like NIL program to facilitate deals for their student athletes. I mean, right. I'm sure they have big bucks there. You have Memphis, who just pulled in the top two recruits in the class of 2021, Imani Bates and Jalen Duren. They both got, I think at least Bates got this big deal from FedEx. And apparently the University of Memphis and FedEx have this like handshake agreement where FedEx is going to give like huge sponsorship deals to these top recruits, and just to pull them, because the FedEx, I think it's FedEx Arena, is where the Memphis basketball team plays. So Memphis is throwing around huge figures, potentially, and it could be illegal because there's not supposed to be any handshake agreements like there has been rumored to be between Memphis and FedEx. So who knows there? But clearly it's working because you just pulled in the top two recruits in the class 2021, and now you're hosting Livingston in a couple of weeks for an official visit, and that's another top five recruit. So I would assume, as long as they're still able to, like, FedEx is going to have another bag of cash in hand to offer Livingston. And so the choice to me is you have two schools that are blue bloods that have, you know, significant NIL opportunities that we know of right now. You have Kentucky and you have Memphis. Then you have the other two schools, Tennessee State and Georgetown. Georgetown has been dragging their feet on NIL. There's no official agreements with any marketing companies that could facilitate deals. You know, nothing's been publicly announced. There could be things going on behind the scenes. We have to give them the benefit of the doubt. But I think we can say that it's not as robust of an operation yet as Kentucky or Memphis.
Right.
How much does that matter to Chris Livingston? Apparently not too much, because he's been in two recent interviews, he said that he's specifically mentioned the NIL opportunities in Washington, D.C. So, you know, we'll take him at his word at face value, and we'll say that, you know, he seems to be satisfied with the NIL opportunities at Georgetown. Then we have Tennessee State, who has a basketball player by the name of Hersey Miller, who is the son of Master P. And he signed a $2 million NIL deal with some tech company, some random ass tech company this summer for $2 million. And he's not like a Tennessee State basketball player, not like, I don't think he was highly like touted recruit either, but he got a $2 million deal. And so Tennessee State is saying, hey, we just got this kid who is not as talented as you a $2 million sponsorship deal. Imagine what we can get you. And so I've been told that like that's grabbed Livingston's attention. So you have Georgetown and Tennessee State, where it seems like they have adequate NIL offerings to give him, maybe not as good as a Kentucky or Memphis. But then you also have the ability to say to Livingston for both those schools, hey, come be the guy. And so at Tennessee State, I mean, he would be the guy. Like, there's no other talent there. But you have the whole HBCU thing, which, you know, I can see why that would be attractive to someone, although we haven't seen too many top recruits really go there. We've seen them flirt with the idea of going to HBCU, but we haven't seen them outside of like Maker actually go to HBCU. At Georgetown, you can be the top dog alongside Amina Muhammad if he comes back for a second year. And you'd be in a more talented team than a Tennessee State. And you could still be the guy, and you could still be part of the, you know, bringing back Georgetown, bringing back that legacy. And so it's to me, it's like, what kind of a person is Chris Livingston? Is he kind of the prima donna who wants to run with the super teams like at Kentucky or Memphis? Obviously Memphis is going to have, they might have Amani Bates for 2 years. I'm sure they'll have another top five, top 10 class coming in with Livingston if he were to commit. And you have Kentucky about to get the number one recruit in the 2022 class, Shadon Sharp. So it's like, does he want to be a front runner, or does he want to like carve his own path and like do his own thing? And so I was talking to someone who knows Livingston and his camp well, and I was like, what kind of a person is Livingston? Like, what are you thinking here? And he was like, Georgetown to him is the favorite. And he said,
wow.
And he said he's always been enamored by the idea of being a major player in the NBA, and Patrick Ewing is a major driving factor. Which, I mean, Memphis also has Penny Hardaway, so that there's that. And the same guy said Chris can be hard to read, but he would definitely put Georgetown right up there. It seems like Chris is like kind of that quiet type of kid. Like he's really quiet, really confident. Doesn't necessarily need to play with that all-star team. But the same guy also said that the NIL is going to matter to Livingston, which I think we know by now. But, you know, I know we have Andrew Slater, who's one of the top recruiting analysts in the country, saying looks like it's going to be a two-horse race between Kentucky and Memphis. But he also didn't make a definitive prediction. So it seems like there's still some wiggle room in this race. And so I don't think I can peg Georgetown as the favorite, but like, I do think we have a shot here.
Definitely.
And I don't think anyone knows really who the choice is yet. I mean, Joe Tipton, who's the graphic designer guru and now, you know, turned journalist, said, he tweeted yesterday, like, he thinks Georgetown could be the favorite here. Like, he thinks Georgetown is more of a factor than people realize.
Right.
So it's like, it's obviously one of those roller coasters where it's like, one week there's some positive buzz for Georgetown, the next week, you know, there's going to be some more buzz for Memphis or Kentucky. And, you know, who knows, he could go on this visit to Memphis in a couple of weeks and then just decide right there to commit then. He could pull a Christian Watson, we don't know. But I definitely think this is a recruitment worth following. And if you get a Chris Livingston, then you know what, like, kudos to you, Patrick Ewing. Like, if you don't want to recruit locally, or if you don't, like, it doesn't matter. Like, if you're going to pull in top five players.
Right.
So
at that point, who cares, right?
Exactly. Like, who cares? Yeah. But, you know, at the same time, I would like Georgetown to be in a position where they don't have to rely on getting a top five kid. Like, I would, like, I'm all for them swinging for the fences, but it seemed like this is a crucial recruitment now. Cause if you don't get Livingston, you're going to be going for Ryan Dunn, who you might have a chance with. You go for Prince Olegbe, who knows where things stand there, but those are just some, I don't really like your chances there as things stand. So it's risky.
I will say, I feel a tiny bit better about his recruitment because he didn't end up transferring in high school to like one of these, you know, like fake schools, mm-hmm. or not necessarily fake, but like these like basically basketball factories, like, you know, Montverde, IMG, etc. He's stuck in Ohio, and like I could not name a single teammate of his, quite frankly. So like, he's not clearly, like, just like the name stuff isn't like the end all be all for him, like blue blood, whatever, pedigree. So that helps. Also, it's cool that apparently his grandfather and Lewis Orr have a connection.
Yeah.
That's like the most random thing I've ever heard in a recruitment, is like your grandpa being tight with one of the assistant coaches. I don't think I've ever heard of that or seen that.
Yeah, man, it's Louis Orr, the closer.
The closer. If he lands us Chris Livingston, we have to build. Like,
oh my God! I mean,
there has to be a statue for him.
Put the statue right next to John Thompson's in the TAC.
Or like one of the rooms next to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, but that would be incredible. But yeah, very interesting recruitment. I don't hate our chances. Like I said, I have my crystal ball in for us right now just because of the Ohio stuff. But if this happens, man, that 22-23 team is going to be like it's going to be a tough out, especially if Trey King sticks for another year too, because he has two more years of eligibility. Yeah, that's going to be a monster.
Yeah, I mean, just like we would have been a monster with PBJ this year, but
yeah,
you know, we'll see. But that kind of brings us in to our last topic, next year's team. Obviously, we're going to be breaking this down more as we get closer to the season. But how are you feeling? We're talking a lot about in 2022-23 how the team's going to look potentially, but how are you feeling about this year's team? I know we've both been hearing some things about how different players have been looking at practice so far. What are your expectations?
I have us pretty solidly as a bubble tournament team right now.
Okay.
I think a lot of people are sleeping on Dante's return and his development. I think our freshman class is probably better than people think it is. I think a lot of people are really only just thinking about Aminu. But I do think we have several contributors beyond him, especially, you know, Jordan, Ryan, Tyler, et cetera. Jalen apparently is, and you've heard this too, has apparently been really solid in practice. So I think we have more pieces than people are giving us credit for, and more seniority than people are giving us credit for, between Don Carey, Trey King, Caden Rice. Like we have like experienced players. Like, it's not just it's a young team too, because we obviously are going to be relying a lot on sophomores and freshmen. But our sophomore class, I mean, they saw it, right? Like, they went through everything last year. They went through the thick of it. So they're pretty much up there. The only question I have is what's going to happen with, like, you know, the center position. That's the spot where, like, I just don't know what to expect. If Tim makes a leap, great. If Ryan is, you know, is ready to go from day one, even better. I don't know if we're going to be willing to play Trey King as small ball center for 30 plus minutes a game. Probably not, just based on how it's been going for the last couple of years. But if that happens, you know, it'd be interesting team for sure, matchup wise. So I think this will be an entertaining year because I really do think that this team has a very like sort of roller coastery potential. Like we could be very, very good. We could be very bad.
Yeah.
But I think that's why I have us as like a bubble team. Like I'm not confident enough yet to say that we're losing a lot, right? Like we're losing Jamarco Pickett, Javon Blair, Chudier. Like we've lost some like very, very solid contributors.
That's NBA professional player, Jamarco Pickett to you.
Yes, thank you.
Yep.
Detroit Piston,
yeah.
Yep. And I think Wahab's transfer. I honestly kind of forgot that happened.
Yeah, same.
It was weird.
And I'm glad. I don't want to think about you, Kudus. Like, good riddance.
Yeah, it's going to hurt, but who knows? Maybe King ends up being better for us based on, like, you know, what you can do on the spacing and stuff. But regardless, whatever. I think we'll be a good team. I'm not as confident this year as I would be if we had obviously, you know, retained one of those guys that left. We lost everyone basically that we were trying to hope that would stay. So, I have very measured expectations for this season, but I don't think we'll be like, you know, a bottom feeder for most of the season like we were last year, right? Like last year or year before when everyone left. We were just struggling for wins up until the Big East tournament, basically. I think this year, like, we'll be competitive in most games that we play in. Like, there's not, I think UConn and Nova are going to be very good this season, too. But for the most part, like, there's nobody that I'm like, oh my God, like, we just cannot. And even our non-conference schedule is not that scary to me. Like, we could do pretty well there, too. So, I think it'll be an entertainment for season for sure.
Yeah, I feel like with the youth on this team, the range of outcomes for the season is going to be greater. I could see us. I would say our ceiling would be a top four team, maybe fourth or fifth place. And I would say, I mean, I could see us finishing like in ninth. I mean, if things get rough with the youth on our team, I could see us finishing ninth place, perhaps. So that's somewhere in that 4-9 range. And you know, we'll see. But, you know, I think you're going to have a top two guard in the conference in Dante Harris, top two point guard.
Top two. That's – so you think he's better than Gillespie? Because you also – sorry, not Gillespie. Posh?
I mean, I think the Posh-Dante Harris rivalry is going to be – I mean, I hope they stay all 4 years because I – like that – those are just going to be some fun matchups. Like I will still take Dante Harris up against Posh Alexander. I think Posh is – I mean, Dante's an excellent defender. I think Posh might be even a little bit better. But I'll take Dante in his offensive package over Posh.
Interesting.
I think
that's a hot take.
Hey, you know, that's what we're here for on Bulldog Banter. You know, I think he's going to be, you know, one of the best guards in the conference. I think they're going to need him to be. I think he's going to get a lot more opportunity to play a bigger offensive role. And as long as he can improve his shooting, like I think he can make that jump. And that's what I've heard in practice. Like he's looked as advertised. He's making that jump in real time. And
awesome.
I think what we're going to need is, I mean, and you've heard this too, like Jordan Riley has been like the best player in practice, at least in the freshman class. Like he's just looked outstanding. Apparently the defense still needs some work, but like he's looked like he's improved his game since he committed to Georgetown. Like he's already an improved player, and he's pushing for a starting job. Like I had one person tell me that he's like, he could be in the starting lineup. Like he looks that good. And so let's just say he's playing at a five-star level. You're going to have Aminu, who's looked amazing as well, from what I've been told. Like that's a lot of talent in that lineup. And so, you know, that could give teams a lot of issues with the speed and athleticism that we can put out on the court. So I'm excited to see it. I think like you, the biggest thing will be, what do they do at the center position? You know, I don't trust that Tim is going to be able to start. I'm sure he'll play a role on this year's team, and certainly I hope with a full summer to work on his game, hopefully we can see some real improvement. I would love to see Trey King as a small ball center. I would love it. I don't know if we'll see it, but I mean, what happened against Colorado in the NCAA tournament was so rough. Like, I think it was bad enough that it would give Patrick Ewing cause to consider changing how he, you know, the type of center that he utilizes out there. We'll see. I mean, he has been reluctant to use the small ball center. But, you know, I just hope that the ass kicking we got in Indianapolis in March was enough to make him want to make a change there.
I think he will. And he, King played like probably like what, 60-70% of his minutes at center, at EKU. So, I don't think like we recruited him to just play the four, for sure. Like, I think he will he'll spend some time at center. It's just a question of, will it be like enough? And like, how does he fit, say, with next to, you know, Hefe or next to Wilson or Ryan? If they're splitting time, I don't know. I don't know about that, but I think he will probably play like a solid like 50% of the minutes we have at center. That's my best guess.
Yeah, I hope, and I think the team will be better with him at center. I think they'll be able to run more, and I think that the offense should be fun. I mean, I think you're going to have a lot of options, and you're going to have Don Carey coming back. Hopefully, expect a big season out of him. I would expect him to start as well. So his shooting will definitely be crucial. Especially with Pickett and Blair going. Right. So, you know, I think there's some reason for optimism, and, you know, hopefully as we enter the fall, we'll start to hear some more about how people are looking at practice. But, yeah, it's good to see things, getting back to normal. We should have fans back in stands at Capital One Arena this year. I can't wait to go back to covering games. Hopefully going back to covering the team as usual. And so, yeah, I think that's it for, today's episode, but it was good to be back with you all. We'll be checking back in every now and then as the news requires, the Bulldogs to come on and banter. But hope you all are doing well. Thank you for listening, and be sure to download, rate, and subscribe if you get the chance. But with that, that's Aiden signing off for Bulldog Banter, and Omar as well. We will talk to you later.